I don't see any race for governor to be somebody who's going to win by 5% or 10%. That's just not going to happen. But the what was the question again?
This is not the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, I know. But I was headed down the road.
No, it's about what Governor Newsom is doing in California.
Yes. And what? Well, it's the problem is I find it disgusting that Trump calls up the people in Texas and says, "Hey, I need 5 more seats," and then we're put in the Democratic governors are put in the position of doing something equally horrible, frankly. You know, there should be a process that people follow, not like when the president says jump, you jump. And then, so I'm glad I'm not in that position that Newsom is, that he can do it. He's got a whole bunch of Democrats there percentage wise. And but what happens then is that the people in Iowa do it, or someplace else that's red does it.
Missouri,
and so what have we gained? We've essentially decided that the process of setting maps is not a thing that is holy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's a thing that is frankly disgusting. So I hate to say this, but you know, the president started it. I suppose we have to respond to it. We could not respond to it even if we wanted to. So it frustrates me. I see it and I get a little ticked off about it, but I guess if that's the way they have to play the game, we have to respond.
I know all politicians dislike hypothetical questions.
Yes.
But if you had control of the legislature here and you could change a couple of congressional seats to make a difference,
no.
You wouldn't do it.
No. I couldn't. Uh-huh. I spent my whole damn life talking about fair maps, and to say, oh, I'm for fair maps, I want an independent group that develops those fair maps, except that when I want to get back at somebody. That'd be hard for me to do. That would be very, very hard for me to do. And so the answer is I couldn't do it.
That's a very honorable position, and one that most of the other guests here have taken the other side on.
Well, of course, I get it, but they're not in a position that for the last 20 years, we need an independent group of people making the maps, and Wisconsin is above board. I hate to say that, but we are.
Yeah, well, that's the tradition here.
Yes.
I'd like to ask some more personal questions for a while.
I already told you I'm 73.
When you were a kid, scraping the mold off cheese in Plymouth, Wisconsin, did you grow up like Clinton and Obama, thinking you'd be president or governor someday?
God, no. Absolutely.
What were your dreams then?
To marry my wife. I met her in kindergarten.
Oh, you got me beat there.
Yeah. So that's where my focus was most of the time. No, I have to go and talk about my folks first. And my father was a physician. He was the doctor in a tuberculosis sanatorium in Sheboygan County, and he was from Illinois originally. And he came up and married my mother, and she was a nurse, she was a doctor, and he ran this sanatorium. And we lived right on the grounds of that sanatorium. They had a house there, and he walked to work, and that's the way things, every county had some sort of tuberculosis sanatorium.
Was that a happy place to be?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. It was good. People got better. tuberculosis. But the thing that I learned from him, and it paid dividends in my head at least, is that he Kohler Company is right there near it's in Sheboygan County. And Kohler Company, back in the days, the workers there got lots of silicosis because of the sand in the air when they're making toilets and bathtubs and things like that. So he spent a lot of time on making sure that those workers got the what they should get from the state when somebody is gets ill at work. And he spent a lot of his time there, and the Kohler Company, AFL-CIO folks have always stood behind him. And I learned that. I learned that you had to, if you want to be successful, you have to consider the people that are actually doing the work and making sure that they're healthy. And so that was a good learning experience. And so I never thought of being governor at all. I never thought I'd be a politician at all. But my parents were both active politically. They would, you know, my mother would invite people over from the university to have dinner with us. And, you know, of course, they were all liberals. And so I kind of came from that background.
Which university?
Oh, just the local, the two-year campus at Sheboygan, actually. University of Wisconsin, Sheboygan. And so that was that's the way I grew up, and it was just a regular. I did scrape mold off of cheese, and I was amazed when I became governor, because I visited lots of cheese factories, that cheese no longer has mold on it anymore. So that job would have been eliminated if I decided to do that. So I'm glad I found a different route to success.
Well, let's talk cheese. Why doesn't it have mold anymore?
I have no idea. I've asked that question a whole bunch of people, and they say, I don't know. And so I'm guessing it's the way they make it, because I can remember.
I think I've got mold on some of my cheese in the refrigerator
right
now.
Well, yeah, but you should eat it before it gets moldy. And I eat a lot of cheese. It's just amazing. But I never liked it until I worked in a cheese factory. And I'd be on the line there, and 40 pounds of cheese, if it was very old cheese, it would have at least a half an inch of mold on it. You'd scrape it off, throw it on the floor, scrape it off, throw it on the
floor.
What
do you use to scrape it?
It's a cheese scraper.
Cheese scraper.
That's what they called it. I can remember that. But it was great. Like I said, I met my wife in kindergarten, and we went to school together, and we still hang out. We go to every 5 years, we go to a class reunion. The numbers get smaller, folks, every time you go. But it's all good. It's fun. Kathy's on the Zoom with a group of her friends from high school. I think once a week they do that.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, it's good. It's cool. It's Wisconsin.
How big was Plymouth High School?
I don't know, 400 kids maybe. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's relatively small. Not big back then, but yeah.
And when did you decide you wanted to be a teacher?
Oh, that was after going to college. I actually was hoping to follow my father and be a doctor. That didn't quite work out.
Because you didn't like...
Well, I had a 3.75
chemistry
in from UW, and that was too low back then. It was really competitive back then. So Kathy and I went. So long, people are going to wonder when I'm going to shut up. But
keep going.
I got to tell you a story.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go to medical school. It didn't work out, and so Kathy and I were married then. We lived out in Middleton, and I got home from school one day, and she said, "What is this?" And I was approved to attend the medical school in Graz, Austria. And I thought, "What in the hell is going on here?" And I had forgotten I applied, and so we decided, "Let's do this." And we went to Graz, Austria for a year, and didn't plan out. I knew no German before I left. And so we could communicate well on daily stuff, but as a learning something as complex as that in German was difficult. So after a year, we left, and I decided I want to be a teacher. So that's what I did.
And what did you want to teach?
Biology.
Biology.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was great. And then after that,
what kind of teacher were you?
I was a good teacher, I thought. Yeah, but I liked to follow to some extent the interests of kids, sophomore kids especially, and so we did as much as we could outside of the classroom as inside the classroom, because you can learn things about science by looking at, in close terms, the lawn in front of the high school. And so there's all sorts of things that happen there that are really important and thoughtful. And so we spent a lot of time outside the classroom. So like that became an elementary principal. And
we're going to stay right there for a minute.
Okay.
You know, I wrote a biography of Vince Lombardi, and he was a teacher before he became a football coach.
Yes.
And what he learned as a teacher was how to convey information so that every student understood it, from the one that would have the most struggle with it to the smartest kid in the class.
Yeah.
And that helped him learn how to deal with people, basically. Yeah. So did you learn things from teaching that you think you carried with you?
No question. Yeah. No question. But anything I did in the education sphere prepared me for this, you know, whether I was an elementary principal, high school principal, whatever, and superintendent.
Loved and why everyone. Did you want to get into administration as opposed to taking away from the kids?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I was also the one that I was a union guy, and I was, which was a great learning experience. But the superintendent where I was at thought, you know, this guy'd be a better administrator than a union leader, and so he
you decided, mean get him inside the tent instead of outside.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, so I moved from that piece to becoming an administrator, and it's fun. One of my best jobs was being high school principal. I learned so much there from kids. Every noon hour, I'd go out to Smoker's Corner because we left kids out there and smoking, and I found out so much. Either that or they lied to me a lot. But
would they stop smoking when you came around?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Oh, good for them. Yeah.
No. It was Smoker's Corner.
Did you smoke?
Not with them. I did
just
smoke.
Just in the teacher's lounge where it was all smoke.
Oh, my God.
Time.
It was horrible. Yeah. I'm glad I stopped. It was best thing I did. Anyway, but it was fun. I learned something new every day there. It's been a blast.
So why did you want to become superintendent of schools in the state? And you ran three times, is that right?
Three times, three times. Yeah. I knew that if I remained at the local level, I would never be able to advocate for kids. Even I know I could advocate even better for kids at the state level. Have had success, and I love being state superintendent. And I was able to make some changes that I think were helpful, and I really advocated for the teacher unions, always have, always will, and so that's obviously an important thing in the state of Wisconsin. So it was a good run. It's just that at a point I realized if I could even have a better direction to make an impact on kids' lives, I should become governor of the state. That's why I did it.
going back slightly, you ran and lost twice before you won the superintendent's job. Is that right?
Yes.
And that's, I mean, I'm always interested in how people overcome failure. I mean, I don't consider that necessarily failure, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to say, well, I'm going to do it again the second time or the third time, or you just...
I knew I could win. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was not good. I mean, I suppose at some point in time, if I'm running when I'm 73 for the first time, that would be a problem.
Yeah.
But no, I always felt I could win, and it was difficult because the first couple of times it was just I didn't know what I was doing, frankly, and I ran and didn't have the support, you know, the internal support. When I did finally win a race for state superintendent, I had my stuff together and had good background and had good people working with me and all that, and that made a huge difference.
And as someone who devoted your life to education, Act 10 must have been a real crisis, a point where you decided,
yeah.
Or how did that affect you, I guess?
It was horrible. It was, you don't take rights away like that, and just assume that it's going to work out, because it doesn't, and it didn't. And so that was horrible. We're still, you know, and the thing that I'll never forget, it was essentially a lie when the people that did this saying, well, we're saving all this money. And it was because the teachers were paying more for retirement, they were paying more for health care, they were paying more for all sorts of things that they never paid for before. So there was no additional money put into schools. It was taken out of the pockets of teachers. That was wrong, and it's still wrong. And so that was a motivating factor. We still have a long way to go. I think if we get the right kind of folks in the legislature, we will be able to make that change. There's no question.
You know, the word hero is thrown around a lot for military personnel and sports figures, but the real heroes in the community are the teachers and the nurses, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. They impact lives every single day, and it's not that, you know, the people that run small stores downtown, they obviously make an impact on the community and the environment and the the economic health of a city. But at the end of the day, nurses and teachers are the backbone of our state and our country.
How much, I mean, along with the 400-year thing and everything you've tried to do, how do you feel about what you've been able to bring back from Act 10 to today?
Yeah, we're at a stalemate on Act 10. I mean, whatever we can do to raise the stature of teachers and all that, that's important, but we need to allow people to be in a union if they choose to be that way. But I think we've made, and I'm not changing the subject here, but I think we've made some, and it was partly in my head too. Yes, I wanted to make sure kids had the best opportunities possible, but it became clearer and clearer to me as when I was governor that there's a whole subset of things that need to be addressed if kids can be successful. Healthcare, transportation, housing, you name it. And all those things impact the lives of children. And if we want to be successful as a state, yes, we have to do right by our teachers. Yes, we have to have good things going on in schools. Yes, they need more money. Yes, yes, yes. But if they don't have good health care, if they don't have transportation systems, if they don't have affordable housing, you name it, all those things, because a teacher has that kid for 5 hours a day, primarily 3/4 of the year, sometimes more. All those other things are year-round. And unless we recognize that there has to be good things, as I mentioned before, and money flowing into making sure, you know, affordable housing. Tomorrow I'm going to be, I think it's tomorrow, going to someplace in northern Wisconsin that sometime during the campaign or during the pandemic, they got some money, worked with a technical college, helped build housing for workers, affordable housing in northern Wisconsin. That's a win. That's a win for kids.
You taught biology, so I guess in the scope era it would be different, but you've got Oklahoma and Florida now mandating teaching of the Ten Commandments and a false history of the United States where slavery wasn't so bad. If you were a teacher in one of those states, what would you do?
Leave. I would leave. And just using this as an example, I mean, was it Louisiana, you're putting the commandments on the wall. So what if your kid is going to that school and you're not involved with any religion, or you are a Muslim, or you are whatever? How is that moving the needle? That's not moving the needle. And that, I'm sorry, that bothers me a lot, a whole lot. And some of the things that I hear now, it's bothersome. We have to make sure that we keep our public schools public.
So how does that relate to school choice?
Pardon me?
What's your feeling about school choice in general or specific?
Yeah, it's just overall, I would have never supported it. But we now, we've had it for, I think, almost 40 years here in Wisconsin. So I know it's not going to change anytime soon. And so my goal is to, you know, make sure that the public schools get as much resources and help from the state as possible. But I also know that in the near future, there is going to be voucher schools in Wisconsin. I mean, once it is in place, I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Paul Fanden likes to talk about quintessential Wisconsinite figures. Yeah. You know, from Gaylord Nelson and Herb Cole. And he says the most quintessential is Tony Evers.
Quintessential. Quintessential sounds like old.
What is your image of Wisconsin? What does Wisconsin mean to you?
That's a great question. I think it's... it's a great place to live, a great place to raise kids. It has people that are very, very conservative and people that are very, very liberal, and there's a whole bunch of people in the middle. I think Wisconsin is a very special place, and we have to protect it. We have to protect it. There's lots of things going on in Washington, D.C. that would impact the lives of all Wisconsinites. In fact, this last, I don't even want to say the name of the bill, but you know what bill I'm talking about. You know, how many people can name a bill without it being named? You know what I'm saying? It wasn't called the blah, 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 BBB or whatever the hell it is. It was some other name. But because the press talks about it in that terms, and that's what everybody else, I won't say the words. I won't say the words, I'm sorry. But we, to put it bluntly, yeah. I think what's happening in Washington, D.C. is not quintessential Wisconsin. It is not, it is not. People in Wisconsin, I don't care if you're a small town, big town, or you're Republican, you're Democrat, you're very conservative, you're not very, you're a liberal, you wanna have good schools. You wanna have good roads. You wanna have, you know, good housing. All those things people care about, and there's a lot of unanimity around those things in Wisconsin. If we can just get through the politics, and I think we are making some progress.
The other thing you want is a good governor or a great governor. So
yeah, for sure, you got to have one of those.
We've had one. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Civic Media's coverage of the Cap Times 2025 Idea Fest. I would like to thank Luke Mathers, Chris Casper, Dominic Lee, Parker Olson, and Pat Kreitlow for making this broadcast possible. I'm Aaron Zommers, and we now return you to your regularly scheduled Civic Media programming.
Exactly.
That's yep. Good.
One vote per person.
Mm-hmm. And so if I am all of a sudden I find myself, I got to be out of town on election day, how do I vote early in person?
Yeah. So we have on our website, Minneapolis or vote.minneapolismn.gov has all of our early voting schedule. It is a little funky. There are a couple of days that we have, like we have the 13th off for Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. We have a different schedule for the last 2 weeks. So from like October 27th through the 31st, we're from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. The day before the election, we're open till 5 p.m. So I would just recommend if there's anybody looking to find the schedule for what our hours are for voting in person at 980 East Hennepin, just to go to our website and then consult it there. Or, yep, call 311 and we'd be able to happy to help you that way.
And what's that website?
Vote.minneapolismn.gov.
And that will also have information for the pop-up centers, right?
Yes. So it's a little... it's a little tricky to navigate, but if you're on the homepage of vote.minneapolismn.gov, on the voters tab, there is a vote early in person tab. Inside of that has the schedule for when we will have our early voting hours for our center. Okay. And on that website as well, on that same page, is the pop-up schedule, locations, address, the hours. It has a lot of information available there.
Okay, can you say again more about the voting pop-up option?
Yeah, so it's got all the same safeguards in place that we would normally have at a regular polling place. So we are able to service any of the Minneapolis residents at any of these pop-up sites. Like I said, we have the equipment that we are able to bring your ballot to you. Even though you might not even be in your neighborhood. So it's just one day only that we will have these pop-ups at these sites. So if you're looking to, if you're in that area or transportation is an issue to 980 East Hennepin, but you're wanting to vote early, look into that website and check into seeing if there are any locations that might work for you that you can make.
One quick question, I hope, in before we have to end. When can we expect to know the results of the election?
Yeah, so voters should visit vote.minneapolismn.gov.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow. CBS News Special Report. Charlie Kirk, a conservative activist and ally of President Trump, is shot to death at an event on the Utah Valley University campus. The single shot that struck Kirk in the neck sent the crowd running for cover.
I got up and followed the crowd, and I just kept holding her. I don't even have my shoes on. I left my keys, like, and everyone's just, like, scared. Like, it's traumatizing.
FBI Director Kash Patel now says on social media that the subject in custody has been released, so they do not have an individual in custody that we are aware of. KUTV's Brian Schnee says Kirk was answering questions today.
A student I spoke to said they were there to exchange ideas and get a better understanding of the dialogue in today's country, but all of that shattered as soon as Charlie Kirk was shot.
Utah Governor Spencer Cox.
This is a dark day for our state. It's a tragic day for our nation. I want to be very clear that this is a political assassination.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers lose in Texas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers lost to the Texas Rangers today, 6-3. The Rangers completing a sweep of the crew. The last time the Brewers were swept in a three-game series was opening weekend in March in New York against the Yankees. The Brewers had 11 hits but could only manage to score three runs. They have tomorrow off and host the Cardinals Friday night. NFL. Packers making an interesting move, signing wide receiver Christian Watson to a one-year contract extension worth over $13 million. Watson rehabbing that torn ACL he suffered January 5th against the Bears.
I mean, I don't have a timeline as of right now. I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, get back to feeling 100%, doing, you know, everything I need to do out there, and I'll kind of just let the trainers and everything, you know, let me out. I mean, it's been feeling really good so far. I haven't, you know, had anything, you know, to deal with so far. It's all just been, you know, feeling really good. I'm able to keep my going out there and attacking my rehab, and oh yeah, it's been going real good.
That's the Packers' Christian Watson with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives star and founder of the soft swinging group on TikTok called Mom Talk will be the new bachelorette. Taylor Frankie Paul will have her pick of men on national television. But be careful, attention-seeking hot guys, because she is no stranger to scandal. Paul, the mother of two, confessed that she and other couples in the community were soft swingers, meaning she and her husband regularly made out with other couples. Once you get a look at Taylor Frankie Paul, you'll realize why all the other husbands wanted a French kisser. In addition to two hot first names, she has perfect eyebrows. According to the New York Post, the soft swinging resulted in a pregnancy for Paul by another husband. That must have been some kiss. Beware, though, bachelor, she was also charged with a third-degree felony for throwing something at her first husband that accidentally hit her child. Don't worry, the charges were dismissed, paving the way for Paul to choose another potential baby daddy on national TV. I think I'm in love. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, a partly cloudy sky, a low within a few degrees of 60, and mostly sunny for tomorrow. Night stay with a high in the low 70s. A high in the mid-70s on Friday with sun, a chance of showers and storms Friday night into Saturday. It's 69 degrees right now.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
The author of Bowling Alone says, let's foster new forms of electronic entertainment and communication that reinforce community engagement. Well, that's civic media. That's Up North News, trying to get more of us off the couch, give you good information while you are listening, but then to step up, get out there into your community and bring a friend to the voting booth.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we're recombobulating the news on Thursday. That's right, Dan Schaefer is here, and we're going to be talking about everything coming out of Wisconsin politics, including a huge announcement in the governor's race. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content. Aho, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I am Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And joining us now is Jolene Jones, representing Make Voting a Tradition, a culturally specific, year-round, multi-generational approach to increase voter turnout and civic engagement in the Native American communities in Minnesota. Welcome, Jolene.
Thank you for having me, Christine. I appreciate the invite.
I'm so excited to have you on. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe what drives you to do this work?
So, Buju Mishko Banishi and Dishmi Kuz Mung Dudame. My English name is Jolene Jones. I always try to introduce myself in our cultural name because that's our true name. The reason why I think I got started in voting was my mother, when we would turn 18, would take us to vote that year, if it was a voting year. And I was very excited about going. And it was like a tradition with her. My older siblings did it. And then I've done it with my son. I've done it with my grandchildren. So that's why voting became so important to me, because it was something that my mother considered was our duty, and we needed to do it for our people. I think for me, it became more important as I seen our community didn't want to vote due to our history and traumas with government, mm-hmm. and not feeling like their voices are heard. And this is a way for their voices to be heard. And I want them to know that. So we do a lot of one-to-one work, Make Voting a Tradition does, to get our people out to vote. We do candidate forms. We just did a mayor's candidate mm-hmm. form. It was the first all-Indigenous one, where it was the programs that sponsored it was Make Voting a Tradition, American Indian OIC, NACDI, the Native American Community Development, who actually created MVAT. And also Indian Health Board? I don't know if I did, but Indian Health Board was a part of that also. One of the main questions that I really enjoy, Christine, one of the questions that was asked of all mayoral candidates was, do you believe in land back? And they all said yes, and we have that recorded. Mm-hmm. So we have that on file. You know, we do surveys of our community to ask what we're missing. In 2015, after elections, we did a survey of our community, and one of the things that came up was that if voting is so important, why aren't you guys here year-round? Why do you only come for voting? Why don't you educate us throughout the year, get our 18-year-olds when they're turning 18, all of that? That was before 16 and 17-year-olds can register. They can mm-hmm. register now. So NACDI took that to heart. It was a community voice that was heard, and NACDI made Make Voting a Tradition a year-round program. Mm-hmm. So that was very awesome. You know, we provide voter education, resources. We answer the hard questions. Right now, like you talked about earlier with Zach, we're in ranked choice voting this year. So mm-hmm. we have fun with ranked choice voting because we're Make Voting a Tradition. So we do like Big Bird, Elmo, our kids get to vote. Our adults vote for other things. They get to practice voting. So when they walk in, they ain't shocked by what they're voting for. And they get to say, why is it like this? So, you know, we try to get a little bit ahead of the game for our community. Mm-hmm.
I know you guys have done some excellent work in the community. And I heard you guys are an award-winning program. Can you tell us what that award was and who presented it, how you got it?
We got awarded the Secretary of State's award for Make Voting a Tradition. And this is really a big award because it's just not our secretary, Secretary Simon. It's just not him. It was all the secretaries of state, and they all nominate a program and then they select. And
it was a national award.
Make Voting a Tradition won a national award, and it was pretty awesome, you guys. We got it last year when we were doing Indigenous mm-hmm. People's Day in November. We got it, or October, mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, that was presented by Secretary of the State,
yep.
right?
Secretary of the State. I call him. His name's Simon.
Simon. Yeah. I just know that guy.
Yeah. He's a pretty cool guy.
So can you tell us more about who is MVAT and how you all are involved with voter engagement and education for Natives, for our community?
So make voting a tradition is we tend to use community with community. So instead of just having random people, a lot of our people are from our community. They live in our community. They know the obstacles that our community faces to vote. Like I heard you earlier say, what if I got to go out of town for something? How do I vote early? That happens to our people a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, for our elders, we always worry about snowstorms. Mm-hmm. So we have them fill out early voting. And as we get closer, if they don't want to do it, they don't have to. But if it's going to be a snowstorm, they actually get to vote that way. Otherwise, we walk them over and assist them in walking if it's snowy out. So a lot of our canvassers, fellows, when I say canvassers, fellows, I mean our people who get out there and register people at events and that live in our community. A lot of them live in Little Earth. Mm-hmm. We also have young ones who help us. They love doing it. They can't wait to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have our new Instagram up, so you can go there. We're brand new, you guys. If you go to Instagram, it's Make Voting a Tradition. Please go like us. We're brand new on Instagram. We're moving up in the world here. But we do have a Facebook, and it's Make Voting a Tradition. Or you can also go to Native American Community Development and Make Voting a Tradition. It's on there also. Mm-hmm. And we have like how you vote, where we're going to be tabling at that week, because in the Native community, we have events that we go to reach out to our community so we can register our voters, our people who moved. We can engage our youth, our 16 and 17 year olds. We can recruit people to become canvassers and fellows. We provide education like the 16 and 17 year olds. A lot of them didn't know that they could register to vote. Even though there are school things going on, our Native ones still did not know. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of registration with them. We also do a lot of registration with our felons right now because they can legally vote as long as they're not sitting in prison, and unless the judge has told them they cannot vote. So we've done a lot with that. We do a lot of artwork. We engage artists in our community because what we have found, like I talked about surveys earlier, what we have found in our most recent survey we did is that our artwork speaks to our community.
Yes.
The artwork, so we have a lot of posters, a lot of stickers. So when people come to our table, they can take them. Everything's free. We give them away so that, you know, anybody can have them. They don't even have to be old enough to vote or anything. Anybody can have them. We really got some awesome stickers. We got pet scarves because we know that your pets are part of your family too. And you know what? Your vote matters to them too. Mm-hmm. Everything we do is for our community, not to just vote, but for their voices to be heard in the areas they're concerned with. You know, our MMIW policies matter. So your vote matters for policies.
It really does. I think one of the things that has made this program so successful is the work that you've done to recruit community members. I remember different conversations that we'd been in, and we talked about how important it was for our community members to learn about voting from people from our community, people that look like us, talk like us, have the same experience as us.
Yes. That deeply matters. When we had 4 years ago, we had, you know, we got some of our elders who've never voted. Mm-hmm. I had an elder who was 87 years old and he had never voted. And, you know, we all tried to talk to him and he was like, yeah, I don't think I want to vote, you know, and sometimes it takes more than one talking. We got talked 5-6 times. And finally, one of my canvassers was like, you know, you ain't never voted. You're 82. You should do it, just because at the time he was born, our people couldn't vote. We were not allowed to vote. And he thought about it and he told her, you know what, if you walk me over there, I will vote. And we took his picture and he voted.
Oh, that's beautiful. Old.
That was beautiful.
That
because
is
when
beautiful.
He was born, our people weren't allowed to vote. And, we, you know, we stress that too. You know, voting matters. and some of our elders, because also, you know, we, when MBAP first started, we were just in the urban area, because a lot of our people mm-hmm. live in the urban area now due to the Relocation Act and all the false promises. So right. we live in the urban area and our voting is really off. We're like, what do you mean we vote here? Or do we vote up by the res? Because, you know, to us, that's our home, is our reservation. And mm-hmm. it's like, no, we're going to vote right here where you live right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a very mobile people also, Christine. That's why it's mm-hmm. so important to keep registering our Native voters, because we are a very mobile people and we've always been mobile. So mm-hmm. one day they'll be living in Minneapolis. The following year, they're living in St. Paul. Next, they're living in Leech Lake. You know, we're a very mobile people.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that you mentioned were some of the different like swag that you've had. And you use artwork and you collaborate with different organizations, but it would be really cool if one year, like, you could fill up all my relations gallery with all the different pieces of swag, the different posters that you've created. The fact that you've partnered with different community artists to create voting posters, those are so cool.
So our this year's voting posters, we have Frank Buffalo Hyde, we have Afton Delgado, Bree Green, Jonathan Thunder. We've had Steve Primo in the past. We've mm-hmm. had all kinds. And our posters are beautiful. We really should, Christine, at mm-hmm. one point put all of our voting posters in the gallery. That would be beautiful.
And all the Make Voting a Tradition shirts.
Oh, yeah. We got different kinds of shirts. Yeah. We did our logo a couple years ago. Our logo is the bomb. We really have a beautiful.
Who's the current logo. Artist that designed? Who's the artist that designed the current logo?
His name is Frank.
The current logo?
Oh, our current logo? I'm not 100% sure.
It was Bill. Remember. I thought it was Bill Green.
Bill Green. Thank you, Christine.
Brian Green. Yeah.
No, it's Bill. His name's Bill.
Yeah.
Bill Green.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Hey,
I'm like, who was it? It caught me off guard.
Oh, hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio. Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
On view at Minneapolis Institute of Art, artist Mary Sully was a visionary ahead of her time. Born on Standing Rock Reservation, she worked in near obscurity between the 1920s and 1940s, creating intricate, vividly colored drawings that blend Dakota heritage with modern life. Now on display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, experience the first solo exhibition featuring Mary Sully's work, only at MIA until September 21st, and always free to visit. Learn more at artsmia.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune into Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you, Robert. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald. American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And joining us is Jolene Jones with Make Voting a Tradition with the Native American and Community Development Institute. So let's talk about identification requirements for voting. What are the requirements, and will a band or tribal ID work if I want to, when I go vote?
Yes, tribal ID works in the state of Minnesota for voting. But one of the things is Minnesota's a no-show ID. So if we are if we have registered you to vote, you do not need your ID. You do not need anything to vote except know your name and your address, and they will pull you up. But tribal IDs work. School student IDs work from colleges. And if you don't have that, you can bring your ID and I have something with your address on it, so we can verify where you live, and also having somebody vouch for you. So like, let's say you were out of town, you'd never got to any of the MVAT stuff, or you just moved and you weren't planning on moving, and now you got to register to vote and it's already voting time, you didn't get it in. So we would have people at the voting places where you could talk to them, or some like your neighbor, somebody who knows you, a relative, say you moved with a relative, they can vouch for you. But tribal IDs work, and if you're registered, you don't have to bring anything to vote.
So I think one thing I remember is I showed up 1 year. I was supposed to be registered, and I showed up 1 year, and I wasn't registered. So luckily, I got early. I got there early enough, and I had to go home and get some documents. But where can I check to make sure that I'm registered?
So you can go to Make Voting a Tradition. We have a link to the Secretary of State page, and you can check and make sure you're registered to vote. And we do that for people too. So like when we're tabling, or even on election day when people come up, because we will be holding a little party, we will have swagging that out and telling people where they're supposed to vote. So if they come to us and say, I don't know where I vote, we'll look it up for you. You can ask us at any of our tabling events. You can go to our page and look it up. And that's Make Voting a Tradition, our Native American Community Development's page. And you can find it all right there.
Okay, so I'm going to make sure that I'm registered to vote before I go to my polling place.
Yes.
So if I'm not registered, then I need to bring one of those IDs that we mentioned.
Yes.
But you mentioned a party.
So we have started Make Voting a Tradition down at NACD's main office at 1414 East Franklin. We have started to have an election day party. So we do a little party so we can let people know where they go vote. They can pick up swags. They can take pictures. It's all fun for their voting day, to make voting day fun, because it should be fun.
Where is that party?
At 1414 East Franklin at Native American Community Development Institute.
Okay.
Parking lot.
Fun times. I'm
it's
excited
gonna be
for
awesome.
It.
And also, don't forget your tribal ID. And for our homeless people, Christine, I want to stress this. So we do register our homeless people, because they do not need to have an address. So let's say they're staying underneath a bridge. We would register like Cedar Avenue and 22nd as their address. And when we go in and check to where they vote, it will come up where they're supposed to vote at.
Okay.
Because our homeless people's voices matter too.
Yes.
So the state of Minnesota makes sure that they can vote too. And we do register our homeless. We do a special day, just like we will probably be recommending to our homeless that they vote early at Midtown on the 24th, and MVAT will be there to engage them and help them through that. Last year when they did it, they did have a place at Little Earth, so it was a little easier for us to engage our homeless. We just went to the camps and brought them over for them to vote, or told them, gave them flyers about the event. So we want to make sure everybody votes.
Yeah, your vote counts.
Yes, it does.
So some people might need assistance in voting. What are some options if, like, my grandma needs help at the polls?
So if your grandma needs help, you can help her. You can go in and help her. They, even for everybody, they have aid. They have Braille. They have big print for people who can't see that good. And for people who are shaky, of course, you can help them fill in.
Oh, yeah.
So Minnesota is very good at helping our voters vote. They are very engaged in it, and MBAT's commitment is to make sure that all our Native voters get to vote. Like when I was talking about our elder who was 82 who voted, the person went in with him and helped and read it to him because he was not a good reader. So so that happens too, where we have people who can't read that well and we read to them and we tell them things. We also do that on our page. We also will post and talk about these are your candidates. So we also partner with the League of Women Voters, and they currently have a voter guide out right now. So they have all the candidates in it, who's running for mayor, what the mayor office does, city council candidates, what the city council office does. So, you know, we do readings with people. We'll sit on and read the book out loud to people. We do that at Little Earth Elder Group. We do that in craft class. You know, we just do them. We don't ask people if they can read or not. We just read their candidates and what the mayor's office does. And that's what we do. That's our job, to make sure our people feel comfortable. That's why we also, like I said, practice voting, because we want our people to feel comfortable. And the reason why we give out shirts, and this year our shirts are light blue, is because we want them, when they walk in the boat, if they see another light blue shirt, to feel like, oh, I know them. They're Native. Yeah. They got a light blue shirt.
Yeah. So do you have any final advice for people as we head toward Election Day?
My final advice is to check your registration if you've moved in the last year. If you've had anything going on in the last year, it doesn't take but about a minute and a half to check your registration. If you don't feel comfortable checking it yourself, you can go to the Make Voting a Tradition page and you can see where we're tabling at. Our biggest event coming up is going to be on Indigenous Peoples Day on October 13th at American Indian OIC. We'll be giving shirts away there. We'll be doing last minute voter registration because we're getting close to Election Day. We'll also be checking to make sure you're registered, and we will have all kinds of swag, and you will get to see our artwork in sticker form. We will have some of that artwork in posters, and we will have some yard signs with the artwork on it.
Ooh, okay.
So,
yard signs.
Yes, we are ready to go. But they're going to be big enough to put in your window, too, if you live in an apartment.
Oh.
So they're going to be a little smaller. Last year, we got the bigger ones. This year, we're going to get the medium ones so that people can put them in their windows if they live in an apartment.
Medium? What do you consider a medium size? And I'm asking because, like, where I live, you can't put anything political up.
Maybe 12 by 16.
Okay. I'd love to rock something on my car, though.
Oh, yeah, we got stickers for your car, but we have not put any of our artwork in bumper stickers. Thank you, Christine. That's a wonderful idea. I am going to bring that up to our communications team.
Wow, I hope I get one. Ho-wah.
Thank you so much, Jolene. It's been a blast.
Thank you for having me, Gigawabaman.
See you later. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow, too. Great job, Christine, as always. This has been a very interesting show, as always. This episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis, Minneapolis Air, and a big peeny geegy to our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Good night. Thank you.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, we make the popcorn pick of the week, where we give you a movie suggestion. Then Al Petrelli, guitarist for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, joins to talk about upcoming shows. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Special Report. Authorities say they're searching for a new person of interest in the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. It happened during an event on the Utah Valley University campus this afternoon. A single shot was fired and struck Kirk. President Trump saying in a video on social media that radical left rhetoric contributed to Kirk's killing.
This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today. And it must stop right now.
Republican Utah Governor Spencer Cox.
Charlie believed in the power of free speech and debate to shape ideas and to persuade people.
More from CBS's Robert Costa.
Charlie Kirk was someone who was a father, he was a son, he was a husband, and he was also a political force.
Charlie Kirk was 31. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
As was